The Parsha of Toldos focuses on the Toldos of Yitzchak, namely Yaakov. Indeed, that's Rashi's opening comment. Ve'eda Toldos Yitzchak, Rashi says, Yaakov ve'Esau ha'amurim be'Parsha. And I'd like to take a look at the naming of Yaakov and Esau, or chronologically Esau and Yaakov, and that's referred to in Perek Kafhei, beginning with Pasuk Kafhei. And as we'll see, there's something of a chiddush in both names, in the naming of both sons. Pasuk Kafhei states, Vayetse Harishon Admoni, Kulo Ka'aderes Se'ar. So the first one came out red, and he came out all full of hair. Vayikru'u Shemo Esav, and he's called Esav. The Pasuk tells us, Vayikru'u Shemo Esav. They called him Esav. Who is they? Who are they? Says Rashi, Hakol Karolo came. Everyone called him Esav. Why? Because he kind of came out almost, or at least hair-wise, fully formed. Kiben Shonim Harbes, if he's a few years old already. He comes out ready for his upsharon. So this itself is a chiddush. On the one hand, the pasuk says Vayikru Shmo Esav, so it's clear, well, perhaps one could have said Vayikru'u is Yitzhak and Rivka, the plural. And Rashi says everyone called him Esav. That's a chiddush, because the name that he ends up with is the name given to him by whom? By everyone. When they reached the point where they said Vayikari Shmo Yisrael, the whole audience chimed in and said Esav. It's rare that we find the general public being consulted, number one, and number two, that they are responsible for giving the name. It's also interesting that they all called him Esav, as if to say, even if everyone noticed, and it was hard to ignore the fact that he was full of hair, and perhaps they even judged it appropriate to call him based on that, but the name Esav is seemingly one of a dozen ways that you could refer to that. Somehow everybody honed in seemingly on the same name, Esav, unless the idea came from everyone, but that it was an individual who did the Makke B'Patish and actually decided that he should be called Esav. But in any case, the Pasuk says, Vayikru'u Shmo Esav, they called him Esav. Then we come to Yaakov. Va'acharechein yatsa achiv, after that his brother came out. V'yodo ochezes ba'akev Esav. His hand was holding the heel of Esav, v'yikra shemo Yaakov. And he called him Yaakov, in contrast clearly to the they, v'yikra'u, calling him Esav, he called him Yaakov. So that much is clear. What is not clear is, who is he? Who was the one who called him Yaakov? Pasuk doesn't say. And Rashi actually gives us two perushim. The first perush says Rashi, Vayikra Shemo Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem called him Yaakov. As if to say, I mean, Rashi is responding to the fact that the Pasuk really doesn't say, it uses the pronoun, he called him Yaakov, doesn't say whom, and therefore the first approach is in the absence of any person, anyone specifically being mentioned, we default to, in a sense, the ultimate pronoun, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. What's interesting is, if this is the case, it turns out that Yaakov is unique. Yaakov is not the only one to have his name given to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is the only one who has two names given to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As if to say, later on in Vayishlach, Hashem appears to him and says, your name will no longer be Yaakov, it will be Yisrael. We've had people being renamed by Hashem, but the first name was always given to them by, Avram was called Avram by Terach, and Sarai was called by her parents. We have people from the outset that Hashem says what their name should be. Yitzchak, he told Avram to call the son Yitzchak. He told Hagar to call her son Yishmael. So we have the first name given, and we have a name change given, but to have both is unique within Yaakov. The original name was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then the subsequent change also made by Hashem. That's the first Peirush, that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself who called him Yaakov. But then Rashi says, Dover Acher, an alternative explanation, Aviv Kara Lo Yaakov, that his father called him Yaakov. Al Shem Achiz Asa'a Kevam, due to the fact that he was holding on to his brother's heel. So the idea that it was Yitzhak that called him Yaakov is Rashi's second Peirush, interestingly. We may have thought it should be the first Peirush, as if to say, in the immediate context, the male pronoun will be his father. Rashi puts it second, and the reason why, as the Maskil HaDavid points out, one of the great Mefarshei Rashi, Rabbi David Pardo, in the Maskil HaDavid, is that the Pasuk does not seem to indicate that it was Yitzhak, seems to indicate that it was not Yitzhak. And the reason, very simply, is that the concluding words of the Pasuk are, V'yitzhak ben shishim shana beledes osav. Yitzhak was 60 years old when they were born. If you've been talking about him and then go on to talk about Yitzhak, it sounds like the him is not Yitzhak. And that's why, although it's not impossible, this Peirush is actually said by Rashi second. So that seems to be all we can say in terms of who called him Yaakov vis-a-vis the Pasuk here. Although, interestingly, the Tosfos adduce support for the idea, for the first Peirush of Rashi, that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who called him Yaakov, from a Pasuk later on. And that is in Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Vav. Let's take a look. We're moving, missing out a few pieces for the time being. Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Vav. Yaakov has taken the brachas. Esav comes in and finds out. Vayomer bo achicha b'mirma v'yikach b'chasecha. Your brother has come b'mirma. He's acted wisely, Unkula says. And taken your bracha. And Esav is just, I mean, this is too much for Esav. He's Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vayomer achikaroshim or Yaakov. It was correct that he called him Yaakov. Vayakveni zepa mayim, he's swindled me twice. Et bechora si lakach, he took my bechora way back when. Vihine ata lakach bechosi, and now he just took my bracha. So this is Esav saying how appropriate it was that he called him Yaakov. The question is, says the Baalei HaTosfos, who's the he? Well, we have two possibilities, except one of the possibilities is Yitzhak. The problem is, Esav is talking to Yitzhak. And he asks Yitzhak, do you have a bracha? Yitzhak says, no. And Esav says, well, it was appropriate that he called him Yaakov. But you can't talk to Yitzhak and talk about him calling him Yaakov. That seems to be further support for the understanding that it was not Yitzhak that called him Yaakov, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu that called him Yaakov. So says the Tosfos. Although, we should mention that there are those who understand that it was Yitzhak who called it Yaakov, and still Esav says the word Kora in the third person. Rabbi Azariah Fijo, in the Drushas Bina Le'itim, says very simply that although Esav at this stage is standing in front of Yitzhak, and he says these words, but he doesn't say them to Yitzhak. And the reason why is because we know that Esav is takes great pains to present himself to Yitzhak as someone who is very serious and very idealistic and medactic b'mitzvahs, etc. And therefore, the last thing he wants to do is tell Yitzhak that he sold the bechora. Because to say he sold the bechora and not for the pot of lentils is an indication that he doesn't really take Avodas Hashem very seriously, and that's the opposite of the impression that he takes great care to promote within Yitzhak, and therefore he couldn't help himself but say it, but he did not say it to Yitzhak. He kind of said it under his breath, or he said it to himself, and therefore he's in front of Yitzhak, and yet talking about Yitzhak in the third person, because it's not something he would say directly to Yitzhak. Although Rashi himself tells us that Yitzhak did hear those words because he says, oh, Azeh, he's the Bechor, it turns out I gave a bracha to the right person. So those words, whether they were said to Yitzhak, they certainly reached the ears of Yitzhak according to Rashi. The question, however, is, if we pursue the understanding that it was Yitzhak that calls him Yaakov, and we ask, well, why does he call him Yaakov? I mean, of all the things to call him. In a sense, it's easier, so to speak, if Hashem calls him Yaakov, because if Hashem calls him Yaakov, anything is possible. Hashem knows everything. He knows what the future will be, and in the end, he will yet overcome Esav. Yitzchak presumably is not thinking in that way. And Rashi gives us the very almost enigmatic explanation. He called him Yaakov because his hand was holding onto Esav's heel. Except that doesn't seem to be a basis to give someone a name. I mean, this is a name he's got to carry for life. And when he was born, and he grows up and says, why was I called Yaakov? And then they tell him when he was born he was holding Esav's heel, and that's why you're called Yaakov. But why should it be something that makes such an impression on Yitzchak to the extent that he sees that, and now his name is Yaakov? So I came across a wonderful interpretation, or insight really here, in the writings of Rav Leib Hyman Zatzal in the Sefer Chikrei Lev. One thing we do see, and it's an ongoing discussion, and we come back to it every year, Yitzchak's relationship to Esav. He wants to give him the brachas, and the pasuk says that he loves him, and kitzayit befiv, and somehow he really thinks that there's room for Esav in Yitzchak's heart, and especially with the brachas, he feels that Esav can succeed. And how can he think that? We take one look at Esav, and we run a mile. There's no hope for him, it seems. But Yitzchak seems to think there is. It is true that Esav deceives Yitzchak. He asks him his famous Lomdish Shilas about Halachas, etc. But at the end of the day, I mean, Yitzchak has to know that between the two of them, Esav is no Yaakov. I mean, that's got to be clear. I mean, Esav's in the field the whole day, and Yaakov's Ishtam, Yoshev Aholim. What does Yitzchak see in Esav? And an approach that is taken by a number of Mefarshim, the Arachai Makodosh and others, is that it's true. Yitzchak does not see within Esav, he doesn't think he's an Ishtam Yosheb Ahalim, he doesn't think that he's learning all day, questions to the contrary notwithstanding. But he does feel that at the very least there's room within Esav in some capacity to be part of the future of B'nai Yisrael, perhaps as a support capacity, along the lines of Yisachar and Zevulun, perhaps the needs and concerns of the Jewish people can be shared between Yaakov and Esav. I mean, everybody needs someone in the field. It is true, and there's a further element here, Rivka never really goes for it. I mean, Rivka knows seemingly from the outset, she's much more suspicious of Esav. I mean, the classic answer is because she knows what a trickster looks like. I mean, she grew up with Lavan, who's the rebbe of all tricksters. But there is more to it than that. Rivka has received a nevuah about her two sons, and the nevuah says that they will be born going in opposite directions. Shnei le'umim mime'ayich yiparedu. Two nations, I mean, this seemingly, unless things change, but the nevuah says, mime'ayich yiparedu, which means she knows that Esav, all things being equal, is not headed in the same direction as Yaakov. It's also very interesting to note, clearly, that she did not share this nevuah with Yitzchak. I mean, it never was something that was communicated to him. And indeed, there is a very interesting school of thought amongst the Rishonim, that certainly prior to Matan Torah, when a Navi received a nevuah, it was for that Navi only. The Navi did not have license to divulge the contents of that Nevuah. Nevuah given from Hashem to a Navi is to that Navi. If Hashem wants another Navi to know, he'll tell him or her. Evidence of this idea, by the way, very strong evidence, takes us back to Parshas Vayera, where Sarah hears on that day from the bracha, from the malach, that she'll have a child in a year's time. And she laughs. And that becomes a sugya. Why did she laugh, etc., which we discussed at the time. But one thing is clear, I mean, laughter aside, it's clear that she had not heard this idea before, because if she had, she would have laughed then. Except Avram already knows. Avram has already heard. And because he was told at least 3 days earlier, at the time when he was given the mitzvah of Mila etc. He was told exactly these words, and he had his own laughter, which was treated somewhat differently. But the point is, in these 3+ days, perhaps only 3 days, Avram never told Sarah. And the Ramban just raises this question and discusses it. But some Mefarshim say that it's really the same idea. In other words, as much as Avram has received this nevuah that he will have a child, but Sarah did not receive the nevuah, Avram is not telling her until HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that she should be told. And the same is true with regards to Rivka and Yitzchak, which means that they, in a sense, from the outset, are given to have very different perspectives on their two sons, because the nebuah is withheld from Yitzchak that they're heading in opposite directions. It's communicated to Rivka, so she knows and Yitzchak doesn't know, and that's also part of the whole story as it unfolds. But one thing seems quite clear, and that is that Shamayim does not want Yitzchak to know that Esav is heading in a different direction. Moreover, and here we come to Rav Hyman's point, not only would we say that in a passive sense, Shamayim has not told Yitzchak that Esav is perhaps headed for a negative path, it seems that he is even given at least allusions to understand that Esav really is part of the future of Yaakov. How so? Or let's consider one of them. When we think of Yitzchak, and when we think of, let's say, the one event in his life that represents, you know, a high point, if not the high point, clearly, I mean, there's plenty to do after that, but you know, the event that we associate Yitzchak with is Akedas Yitzchak. And with all that we say about it, and we can't say enough about it. It's interesting that the entire event is called Akedas Yitzchak. The name, in a sense, that sums the whole thing up is Akedah, even though we may look upon that as something of a detail or a footnote, as if to say, as a prelude to possibly being brought as a korban, so he was bound. Okay, so be it. But apparently it's more than that, because the Akedah represents the absolute really submission, right? The absolute self-abnegation that really was represented by the Akedah. Well, what does the word Akedah mean? We would translate Akedah as binding. That's correct. Is there anything more specific in the connotation of the word Akedah? Rashi tells us, and we'll see in next week's Parsha, that the word Akedah has a specific connotation. It doesn't mean only generally bound, but specifically it means hands bound to feet. The hand is connected to the heel. That's what Akedah is. That's in Akedah pose. And that's Akedah Sitz. Well, a number of years later, two sons are born to Yitzchak, and they come out in a most unusual way. First one comes out, and he's out, and the second one comes out, and his hand is connected to the heel of the first. Now, other people may look at that and think that's very interesting. Yitzchak looks at that, it's more than interesting, because you cannot be Yitzchak having gone through Akedas Yitzchak and forever imprinted by that, and see two children come out, one hand bound to the other one's heel, without thinking back to the Akedah. And therefore, when Yitzchak looked at this, he saw this as a sign that both of his children between them were, in a sense, Akedah kinder. In other words, they were worthy heirs to the legacy of the Akedah. And so taken was Yitzchak by this. He actually came to call the second son Yaakov because of what that represented for him. And that is how Rav Hyman explains why when Yitzchak saw what he saw, he named the second son Yaakov. One may perhaps add, although it's a subtle point here, we don't know why Yitzchak was given to come to this conclusion. Clearly, if it's the conclusion he naturally came to, then Shamayim, in a sense, wanted him to conclude that. It was important that Yitzchak almost actively think that Esav be part of the program, even though he wasn't necessarily so. But that being the case, the name And the background to giving the name of Jacob was not really given with full awareness of the true nature of Esau and the true nature of the relationship between his children. The Gemara tells us that if a person takes a Shavua without knowledge, that Shavua is not binding, because the Pasuk says, Ha'adam b'Shavua. The person, if the person is there in the Shavua, that means with full knowledge of what's involved. One may perhaps suggest, in light of Rav Hyman's comments, that this is why, although it may be that that Yitzchak was the one that gave Yaakov his name, but the Pasuk concludes by saying, the Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledes Osam, which calls him by name. And of course, the question was, well, if you call him Yitzchak, doesn't that imply that until now we're not talking about Yitzchak? We are, perhaps, but he's not referred to by name, because the something of Yitzchak, that is to say, something of the full awareness of the nature of the two sons, which is missing from him, and therefore that's reflected in his name itself being missing, even though he is the one being described. Perhaps I must add, a couple of years after having read this Ma'amar of Rav Hyman, so it was between Mincha and Ma'ariv in the Gros Shul in Baal Vegan, which is where he was the Rav, and I worked up the courage and went up to him, and I just felt I had to wish him a Yishar Koach for this Chiddush of Yaakov and Esav, and then because I couldn't help myself, I added that it's one of my favorites, and I wasn't sure if that was really appropriate. But he thanked me, and then he kind of turned to me, gave me a smile, and says, I'll tell you a secret, it's one of my favorites as well. So, Baruch Shekivanti to that. Okay, so this is an incredible approach to such an important stage in the Parsha here. Let's move forward, and I'd like to, at this point, refer to some words of the Rambam. And as we will see, quite a lot to say. The Rambam, in Mamash towards the end of Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Melachim, in Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph, describes the process, actually, of mitzvahs, how they came into the world. Because although in the end we have Tirat mitzvahs, and it's also true, the Rambam states emphatically in his Perish HaMishnayos to Maseches Chulin, in the seventh perek, that the event that obligates us in all Tariq mitzvahs is Ma'amad Har Sinai. But nonetheless, in terms of the human race, mitzvahs came into the world before Matan Torah, beginning, of course, with the famous Sheva mitzvahs B'nai Noach, six to Adam, and then the seventh, Eva Menachai, to Noach, which then became known as the Sheva mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But there were others as well. So the Rambam begins with the Sheva mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and then says, V'chein hayah davar b'chol ha'olam. That's how the matter stood really for hundreds and hundreds of years, the seven mitzvahs, ad Avram, until the time of Avram. What happens with Avram? Ba Avram v'nitztave yeser al elu b'mila. And he then received an additional mitzvah of mila. As we know, parshas Lech Lecha. Then says Rambam, "Vehu is Balal Shachris, and he daven Shachris." That we also know. Tfilas Avos Tiknum, and Avram was the one who instituted Shachris. Okay. Then, the Yitzchak Hifrish Maaser, Yitzchak took Maaser, the Hosif Tfilah Acheres Lifnos Hayom, and he added another Tfilah just as the day is ending, that is to say Tfilas Mincha, Mincha Ketana, apparently, according to, well, the Pasuk says Lifnos Erev. The Yaakov Hosif Gid Hanoshe, Yaakov added Gidanosha, Bispal and Arvis. So those are 10 mitzvahs now, 7 plus 3, 1 per Av. Then Rambam says famously and enigmatically, Ufa Mitzrayim Nitzdava Amram b'mitzvahs Yiseiros. Amram then received further mitzvahs. Rambam doesn't say which mitzvahs they were. Adshibah Moshe Rabbeinu, V'nishlema Torah al Yodo, until Moshe came and then the whole Torah was completed and ultimately really given all of those mitzvahs, even the earlier ones. Now, of course, for our purposes, in terms of our discussion, we focus on the Rambam saying that Yitzchak was the one who was Mafrish Masros. But where is that coming from? So it's based on a pasuk in our Parsha, Perek Kafvav, pasuk Yud Beis. And Rashi actually quotes the words of Chazal there. Perek Kapvav, Pasuk Yud Beis, reads, Vayizra Yitzhak Ba'aretz Ahi. So he sowed, Yitzhak sowed in that land, Vayimtza Bashana Ahi Me'a Sha'arim, and they found 100 times more yield than they were expecting, Vayivarchei Hashem. Which means that they made an estimate as to how much the crop would produce, and then it was 100 times more than that. That's the original Me'a Sha'arim. And the question is, why were they estimating? I mean, was it just to think about how much the fruit they thought the crop would bring? Whatever the crop brings, it will bring. Why was it important for them, or of the essence, for them to have an estimate about how much they thought the crop would be? Says Rashi, Sh'amdua, Omed, estimate, Kama Ra'uya La'asos, how much should it produce? And then it was 100 times that much. Rabbeinu Amru, and Rabbeinu said, Omed ze lemas rose higher. The reason why it was relevant to make this estimate is because Yitzhak wants to take Meiser, so he needs to begin to plan how much will it be, and then he'll know how much Meiser to take. So this is the source in the Pasuk for the idea that Yitzhak took Masras. Now, there's just one problem. And that is, which is raised by the Lechem Mishnah, and commentary Lechem Mishnah to the Mishnah Torah there, and that is, here we are saying, Yitzchak, he did a mitzvah of Taryak. It's called Maisras. The problem is, I mean, we have a Mesorah from Chazal, that the Avos, where they could, kept all Taryak mitzvahs. Right? Avos Shomer Taryak, Avram, Bayishmor, Mishmati, Mitzvosai, Chukosai, Sarasai, Yaakov says in Lavan Garti, Tarek Mitzvahs. Again, there are exceptions and discussions, but in principle, that means the Overs are keeping all of Taryag. If the Overs are keeping all of Taryag, if the Rambam subscribes to this Mesorah, then what does the Rambam mean by identifying the mitzvah of Maaser as the mitzvah that was kept by Yitzhak? I mean, it's one of 613. And the point of the Lechem Mishnah is, the reason why I'm raising this question, for example, with regards to Yitzhak, and not earlier one with regards to Avram, is very simply because, why not say the same thing? Why did you mention Mila specifically with Avram? Kept all Taryag mitzvahs. That's not a question, because the others kept Taryag voluntarily. Mila was given to Avram as a mitzvah. He was commanded in the mitzvah of Mila. Well, okay, so that's an exception. The rest he kept voluntarily, but that's the uniqueness of Mila. However, when it comes to the mitzvah of Masros, we never find that Yitzchak is commanded to take Maaser. There is no pasuk where Hashem appears to him and says, you shall take Maaser, which means even though we observe he is taking Maaser, but nonetheless, that's not in response to a command, so presumably it's voluntary. And now the question comes in, well, if it's voluntary, so then they always kept all of Taryag voluntarily. So in a sense, manishtana ha-mitzvah azos mikol ha-mitzvahs, that it somehow has a special mention for Yitzhak. That's the question of the Lechem Mishnah. And a very interesting answer, which is provided by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, who's famous for his work, Aruch HaShulchan, on the Shulchan Aruch, just because he was not enough to write the Aruch HaShulchan on the Shulchan Aruch, also wrote an entire Aruch HaShulchan on all the halachas which are not applicable nowadays, which actually follows the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. Halachas of Tribus of Maisers and Taras and Kochim. There's another number of volumes from the Aruch HaShulchan. It's called the Aruch HaShulchan Ha'asid, the future Aruch HaShulchan. So he's prepared everything already for us. And there he discusses this question of Lechem Mishnah, and once again, in brief, the question is, if the Ovis kept all of Taryag voluntarily, and Maisras was kept by Yitzhak voluntarily, why does it receive special mention? And the HaShulchan says, seemingly, what the Rambam is saying is that it's true, the Ovis kept all of Taryag, yes. However, what's unique about this mitzvah being mentioned by the Rambam of Masters is that Yitzhak not only kept the mitzvah of Taryag, but then he brought it into the family and instructed his children about it. As if to say, not only did he fulfill Masters, he instituted Masters. If you were part of Yitzhak's family, you then took Maaser. That's what's unique about Masters, not only for himself, but also for all future generations, beginning with his children. And the truth of the matter is, this answer of the Aruch HaShulchan resonates actually with a comment of Tosfos, because coming back in Maseches Yuma, Daf Kaf Zayin, we're coming back to the Avram Davin Shachris and Yitzhak Davin Mincha and Yaakov Mar, which we know. However, the Tosfos say, Avram also Davin Mincha and Mariv, because Avram did everything. So why do you say that, why do we attach Mincha with Yitzchak? Because Yitzchak instituted Mincha. Avram didn't institute Mincha. He instituted Shachris. And he davened Mincha. The Gemara actually in Maseches Yuma there refers to Mincha as Tzlosa da Avram, the Tefillah of Avram. When do you daven Avram's Tefillah? And starts to tell you when to daven Mincha. Because Avram is the first person historically to daven Mincha. But he never instituted it. He instituted Shachris. Yitzchak instituted Mincha. And therefore, very similar, we have the mitzvah of Maaser also instituted by Yitzchak for his family and for his descendants. Now, as sometimes happens when the Rambam speaks, there's someone who has what to say, and that someone is the Ravid. The Ravid has a running critical commentary on the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, and whenever he feels that the Rambam should have said differently, he lets us know. And here is one of those times. Commenting on the Rambam's description, and again, Avram Mila and Shachris, Yitzchak was added Masros. Omar Avram, that's the Ravid, Rabbi Avram ben David. Omar Avram, the Rambam really should have said it like this, which is his way of saying he's arguing with the Rambam. What the Rambam should have said is when he's still talking about Avram, v'huit balo shachris, yidavin shachris, v'hifrish maaser, and took maaser. And then Yitzchak added a tefillah called mincha. In other words, what the Ravid is saying is that the Rambam delayed ascribing the mitzvah of Maaseros to Yitzchak, because the truth is, Yitzchak was not the first person to take Maaser. Avram was the first person to take Maaser. Why do I say that, and where does it come from? Well, if you look in Parshas Lech Lecha, after the war, in Bereishis Perek Yudalet Pasuk Kaf, so let us see the first ever taking of Maaser in history. Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Kaf. Avram has gone to war with the four kings. He's defeated them. And then he meets Malki Tzedek. And the Pasuk states, Uvorach El Elyon, Hashem Yigen Tzarecha B'yadecha, these are Malki Tzedek's words, Baruch Hashem, who's delivered your enemies to your hands, by Yitein Lo Maaser Mikol, and he gave him Maaser from everything. Says the Ravid, that's Avram. Avram gave Maaser to Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek is Kohen Lekel Elyon, and Avram gave him Maaser. And therefore, says the Ravid, the Rambam really should have ascribed the introduction of the mitzvah of Maaser in history to Avram, not to Yitzchak. Now, of course, not everyone is just going to take that. The Rambam has Mefarshim, and how will they explain the position of the Rambam? Well, the Kesef Mishnah of Yosef Karo, in his Perish Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, says that as true as the Pasuk says, Vayiten lo Maaser Mikol, these two Maasers are not the same. The Maaser that Avram gave and the Maaser that Yitzchak took are not the same. The mitzvah of Maaser in Taryag is to take Maaser from, first and foremost, from the crop, to perhaps other forms of Maasers also. Avram wasn't doing that. When it says that Avram did not bring his Maaseros along with him to the war, just in case he meets a Kohen. When it says that Avram, Vayitel Maaser Mikol, it means he gave him a tenth from the spoils of war, from that which he'd acquired in war. Okay, that is not a mitzvah of Taryag. And therefore, we do not see here introducing the mitzvah of Maaseros. The first one to take Maaseros in the way that the Torah talks about it as a mitzvah is indeed Yitzchak. So says the Kesef Mishnah. Now, interestingly, there's a little bit more to it. Because here we are saying that the Maaser that Avram gave to Malki Tzedek That's from Spoils of War, and that's not really a Maaser, that's a mitzvah from the Torah. Well, actually, there is at least one occasion where the Torah said to do exactly that, to apportion at least some of the spoils of war to the Kohen. And that is in Parshas Matos, right? They go to war against Midian, they bring back, and the Sukkim really describe at great length how much they had and how much it was, and then a certain amount was given to the Kohen. So that it sounds like that type of Maaser from spoils of war, is also a mitzvah from the Torah. However, says the Rogatchov Gaon in the Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, if you look in the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in Sherash HaShlishi, you will see that the Rambam takes issue with the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, on this very point. Because it's actually true. You see, the Rambam says that there are often things that are mentioned in the Torah, and they're mitzvahs in the Torah, but they're not mitzvahs ledoros. They're not mitzvahs for all generations. They're mitzvahs for that generation, specifically the generation of the Midbar. And sometimes there could be a machlokas as to whether regarding a certain mitzvah, is it only for that generation or even ledoros. One such machlokas is about taking miser from spoils of war. The Bahag says, look in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says they took some of the spoils of war, they gave it to a Kohen. That's one of Taryag Mitzvahs. The Bahag listed as Taryag Mitzvahs, but the Rambam explicitly takes issue with the Bahag and says, no, that's not a mitzvah ledoros. That was only for that war. It was for its time. It's not part of Taryag. Well, says the Rogatchover, therefore, the Rambam, we would say, lishitoso, consistent with his opinion, that taking Miser from spoils of war is not one of Taryag Mitzvahs. That's why he sees the first Miser taking, the introduction of the mitzvah of Miser, as a mitzvah ledoros, on the part of Yitzchak. So as we see, there's quite a lot of discussion here. As soon as the Rambam and arrive at, everybody else is going to get involved. What's very interesting is, just as a nuance issue, the Sefer Sha'ari Aaron adds that one can bring support for the position of the Rambam from Unkelus. We don't normally look to Unkelus for a halachic arbitration one way or the other in terms of these machlokasim. However, we know the Rambam himself placed great emphasis on Unkelus. I mean, he really, it's a study, Unkelus. And if you go through Targum Unkelus, says Sha'ari Aaron, you will notice that whenever the word maaser is mentioned in the Torah, Unkelus translates it as maaser. Okay, so, and there's many maasers in the Torah, many times the Torah talks about it. Okay. But if you look at Unkelus in Parshas Lech Lecha, when the Pasuk says that Avram gave maaser to Malkit Zedek, the Pasuk says, Vayita no maaser mikol, and Unkelus translates, Vihavle, and he gave to him, Chad min Asra, one part from ten, from everything. So the Sha'ari Aaron, why are we being so oblique here? As if to say, we know, understand each other, we know what Maaser is, and every other place, actually there's only one other exception, but every other place, when the Torah says Maaser, Unkelus says Maaser. And here the Torah says Maaser, and Unkelus says one part from ten. Why did he say it in such an elaborate way? Seemingly, says the Sha'ari Aaron, Unkelus is taking pains to avoid associating this maaser with the other maasers. This is not like the other maasers. The other maasers are the mitzvah of maasers. This is one part in ten, but it's a separate enterprise altogether. Just in conclusion, with regards to Yitzhak taking maasers, because it's interesting, and again we ask, as much as Yitzhak in a sense chose this mitzvah and brought it into the family, but why, if we could ponder, of all the mitzvahs in the Torah, why would Yitzhak choose this mitzvah to bring into the family? Still the question comes back. Ma nishtana mitzvah azos mikol mitzvahs. One could say that there is a certain affinity between the mitzvah of Maaser and Yitzhak. Because we know that Yitzhak's midah is the midah of Gevura, it's midah hadin, in contrast to Avram's midah, which is midah of chesed Avram. And really, the midah of Gevura and Din finds expression in the mitzvah of Maaseros, because it's actually the only mitzvah, or not, I don't know if it's the only mitzvah, but certainly a standout mitzvah, whereby one doesn't want to give too much. You see other types of mitzvahs, it's almost like here's the minimum, the cholam arbe, harei ze meshubach. Tzedakah, even truma is a very small minimum, but you can pretty much give however much you want. However, we're told with regards to maaser, it is not advisable and also not correct to give more than a tenth. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, al tarbe laaser umados. You shouldn't take a maaser out of an estimate as if to say, well, you know, you can always add on a bit more, and the more the better. It's not better. It has to be exactly a tenth. And that type of precision, in a sense, not too much, exactly right. That's a kind of a Midas Hadin calculation that really perhaps rests well with Yitzhak. I came across just this afternoon, and we see again the Mefarshim, they're all over the Parsha. Here we are, where the Rambam has told us that Yitzhak took Meiser, and says Meshe Chochma, with that in mind, let us take a look at Perek Kafvav, Pasuk Yudalad. It's just two psukim after the Meiser pasuk. And we see the attention to detail. Perikava pasuk katal. So it says again, just a cue in from pasuk Yud Gimel. By Gdal Haish, by Elech Haloch Gadel, Ad Ki Gadal Meod. He's getting more and more prosperous. And what does he have? Yudalad. By Yehile Miknat, by Yehile Miknatzon and Miknat Bakar. So he has a flock and he has cattle. Vavudarabba, etc. And Meshe Chochma draws our attention to one subtle point. Mikne is a person's, in a sense, their livestock. There's different types of livestock. But both sown, and sown, by the way, we'd say flock is sheep and goats, and bakar is cattle, like cows. They're both called mikne. They're both really livestock. And therefore, the simple question is, as you're saying, what he has. So instead of saying Vayilo Mikne Tzon, livestock of flock, Umikne Bakar, livestock of cattle, just say Vayile Mikne Tzon Uvakar. Why does the pasuk, in a sense, split up these animals into two? It says Meshe Chochma, based on the Rambam, we understand, because there are two types of maaser that are mentioned in the Torah. There is maaser Dagon, right, the maaser that you give from a crop that grows from the ground, and Meiser Behema. Now here's an interesting shaila. If you Meiser Behema is 1 out of 10 animals, can you just kind of put all your animals together and whatever comes out, 1 out of every 10? Says the halacha is, and the Rambam himself says, no, it's species specific. As if to say, you cannot put cows and sheep together and then just take 1 out of 10. You have to take 1 out of 10 from the cows by itself. However, you can take maaser from goats onto sheep and sheep onto goat, because that's all called tzon. And therefore, says Meshe Chochma, having just been told 2 psukim ago that Yitzchak was medaktik and he was the one that brought in maasers into the world, so now you see how his possessions are presented, in a sense, maaser compatible, maaser friendly, as if to say, mikne tzon, because they are really distinct in that way for maasers, and then mikne bakar, Meshe Chochma. Just a final ha'ara, I think it's really just more a hargosha. And that is going to be come back to Esav. And Esav has his famous Esav kashas. And what are his kashas? His kashas are in the realms of Miserus. In other words, he says famously, right, how do you take Miser from salt? How do you take Miser from straw? And however you understand those questions, because the truth is that you don't, but clearly he's looking, let's say, to be Machmir. And therefore, as we see that, in a sense, he's looking, shall we say, to deceive Yitzchak, he chose the right mitzvah, because he chose Yitzchak's mitzvah. It's the family mitzvah. And therefore, he's looking to endear himself in that way by adding chumras and hidurim onto the very mitzvah that Yitzchak brought into the world, the mitzvah of maaser. So I'd like to conclude by taking a look at the brachas of Yitzchak, which of course are a major component in the Parsha, and a major point of contention in the Parsha between, ultimately, and from that time, between Yaakov and Esav. And if we take a look at the brachas, which are described in Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Chesem, in the Pesukim we know very well, V'yitin Lecho Elokim, Ital HaShamayim, V'mishmanei Haaretz, V'rov Dagam V'tirosh. That's how it starts out, the dew of the heavens, the fat of the land, abundance of wheat and of wine. And we need to ask the question, I mean, what is the nature of these brachos? I mean, what are they really about? Because we see that there was a great deal went into who got them, and it's, the issue is still, it's still a sore point. So clearly they were worth going after. And yet, we look at them, and we see Tala Shamayim, Mishmane Haaretz, and we can't help but wonder why would Yaakov be going after those brachas? Which is when is it such an issue, and it's really in a sense the question is in Rivka, because she's the one that's pushing Yaakov the whole time, you've got to get them, and in the end he ends up with Tala Shamayim, Mishmane Haaretz, but what's it all about? Ramban says in our parsha that with these brachas, I mean these are his words, with these brachas, Yitzchak was intending to impart Birchas Avram, which is the special, you know, bracha that was given to Avram, and this will be the continuation, and the bracha of Eretz Yisrael, and to be a Baal Bris Lelokim, to be involved in a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are the comments of Ramban. So these words, the bracha of Yitinuch Elokim, and Tal Shemam, Mishmane Arutz, it essentially represents Birkas Avram, Eretz Yisrael, and to be a Baal Bris Lelokim. The only thing is, after all that, I mean, look again at the words, and it's still Tal Shemayim and Mishmane Haaretz, and it doesn't really sound like that. It is true, there are Midrashim, and Alderech HaMedrash, there's many, many things contained within the brachas. Rav Dagam, the Tirosh, his Halachas, and Agodas, and there's all areas of Torah, and, okay, Alderech HaMedrash, Rashi refers to it. Is that what the Ramban is referring to? Perhaps the Ramban means something else. The Ramban, in a number of occasions, discusses really the uniqueness of Am Yisrael, which can be portrayed in many ways, described in many ways. The Pasuk says in Parshas Hazinu, Ki Chelek Hashem Amo, Yaakov Chevo Nachaloso. Chelek Hashem Amo. Hashem's nation, it's his lot. It's his portion. What does it mean, it's his portion? So the Ramban describes, in ways we're familiar with the terminology and with the specifics of which are somewhat abstract for us, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set up the world so that the divine influence begins from him, but then it's handled through various other stages, through what's known as the Sarim, the spiritual overseers, and then Mazalos, the flow, right, the Nozel, and the flow as until that influence reaches people in the way that it does. So there's a certain amount of stages in between. That, of course, is the origins of Avodah Zarah, where people ascribed independent will and power to these things. But essentially, they are filters and so on and so forth to apportion that shef. Says Ramban, that is how it may be for the nations of the world. That's the world that is set up. But Chelek Hashem Amo means that Hashem deals with Am Yisrael directly. That means whatever comes, it comes without anything else in between, even to handle it, to receive it and then pass it on, or any such thing. That's the meaning of Ki Chelek Hashem Am. Interestingly, Talmido, the Talmud of the Talmud of the Ramban, namely Rabbeinu Bachya, in his Perush to our Parsha, notes something interesting. You know, if you look at the end of the Parsha and Esav says, well, do you have anything left for me? Is there anything at all? And so Yitzhak finally says yes. And he says, Pasuk Lamentes, Perikav Zayin, Mishmane Haaretz, Yemashavecha, you'll have the fat of the land, Umitala Aretz Me'al, the dew of the heavens. Now, that sounds a lot like the bracha that he gave to Yaakov, and he said that there weren't any brachas left. So now, but that's a very pressing Parshanut question, because Yaakov has taken pains to get the bracha, which consists of Tala Shemayim Mishmane Haaretz, and that's all taken. And then Esav, there's nothing left except for Tala Shemayim Umishmane Haaretz. What's the difference between the two brachas? Says Rabbeinu Bachya, there's one critical difference. And that is, if you look in Esav's bracha, there is no mention of how those things come to Esav. It's just presented as, you'll get it. You'll have it. Who will give it to you? There's no mention. But that's the critical difference. That is the essential difference between the bracha of Yaakov and of Esav. The most important words in the bracha of Yaakov are not Tala Shamayim or Mishmanei Aretz. They're the words, V'yiten lecha ha'elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give it to you. He'll give it to you direct, meaning you will be the people with whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives directly. That's Rabbeinu Bachya. Well, that's what the Ramban is talking about. In other words, that's why the Ramban says that within this bracha is Birkas Avram, and to be a Baal Bris Lelokim, you have that special relationship. Hashem will give it to you directly. Esav will get it. But in a sense, it won't be given to him. But Hashem will give it to you. And that brings us to the final point of Eretz Yisrael. Because as we know, again, on many occasions, the Ramban explains that one part of the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, and from a certain point of view, Am Yisrael only fully achieve their status and their direct connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael. As the Pasuk says, Eretz Asha'eni Hashem Lekecha, Hashem's eyes are directly on the land, Bereish Sashana Vad Acharis Shana. Which means that part and parcel of the Yitin Nechai Lekim, Hashem will give you directly, means that he will then give you the place where he will relate to you directly. And the Ramban very interestingly says in his Perush to Acharemos, perhaps differently than we would have understood. In Matan Torah, Hashem says, "Vatem tiuli segula, the yisani segula mikol ha'amin. You will be the treasured amongst the nations, kili ha'aretz, kili ha'aretz." So I think we normally understand that what it means is that ha'aretz refers to the world, and Hashem has all the world, and from the world He's chosen Am Yisrael. But the Ramban clearly understands, as he quotes this pasuk in this context, that Kili Haaretz, is Eretz Yisrael. And what Hashem is saying, you will be an Am Segula. Where? In Aretz. Kili Haaretz. That's where the full designation of Am Segula comes to Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, if it Yitenecha, Hashem will give to you directly, that encompasses and incorporates also the gift of Eretz Yisrael. Interestingly, we've quoted from Ramban, we've quoted from his Talmud, Rabbeinu Bachya. But everything we've said is actually stated as well in the Talmud in between, the Briya HaTichon, who is the Rashba. Rabbeinu Bachya was a Talmud of the Rashba, the Rashba himself is a Talmud of Ramban. And the Rashba actually has a tshuva, many, many hundreds of tshuvas, and in Chelek Aleph, in Simon Kuf Lamed Daled, someone asked the Rashba to explain a very difficult sounding statement in the Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas at the end of Kuf Yud Omid Beis, Kol Hadar B'Chutz La'aretz, a person who lives in Chutz La'aretz, K'mi She'ein Lo Eloka, it's like he doesn't have a God. That's what the Gemara says in Ksubas, Talmud Bavli. And someone wrote to the Rashba and said, please explain what that means. Sha'alta, you asked, you inquired, Masha Amru, what Chazal said, Kol Hadar B'Chutzlaret, K'mi She'ein La'aloka. What it means is like this. Obviously, it doesn't mean that this person is without religion or without belief in Hashem, etc. and so forth. However, Tshuva, the explanation is, Lefisha Eretz Yisrael, Nikwes Nachlas Hashem, because Eretz Yisrael is called the inheritance of Hashem. V'hu Yisbarach Nikwa Elokei Haaretz. He's called, specifically, the God of the land, umiyuchedes lo, and it is directly associated with him, velo lesore mala, and not with any other spiritual forces or spiritual overseers, direct from Hashem to us. And therefore, that's why the Gemara says, kol hadar b'chutzlaretz, k'mi she'ein lo eloka, means he's missing out on that direct connection, on that imminent connection. Then says Rashba, we'll see how it ties together. Al-Kain, therefore, Kesheberech Yitzchak es Yaakov, when Yitzchak gave the brachos to Yaakov, Shelo Midato, unbeknownst to him that it was Yaakov, V'nata Noah's HaBrachos, and he gave him the brachos, Dichtiv, V'yiten Lecha Elokim, Mitala Shamayim, Mishmane Haaretz, So as soon as he said, Hashem will give it to you, Miyad Zocha Yaakov, Bebirkas Avraham, Shehi Yerusha Ta'aretz. Yaakov, immediately at that point, it merited the Brachas of Avraham, which is Yerusha Ta'aretz. And that's not left for Esav anymore. And we look at the Rashba, and we've seen the Rebbe, we've seen the Ramban has said this, and it will become then further elaborated through the Rabbeinu Bachya, just to see how this idea is developed from Ramban down to the Rashba, down to Rabbeinu Bachya, and to see that the key words really in the brachas here are the words V'yitin lecha ha'elokim. Just one final point in this matter, which is raised by Rav David Cohen Shalita, the Rosh Hashiva of the Chevron Yeshiva and Givat Mordechai. He directs our attention to a fascinating comment of the Sefer HaChinuch. And it's the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Taf Guf Yud, which is, again, it's a mitzvah that involves Kosein trying to tap into certain spiritual forces, which the Torah puts off limits emphatically for Bnei Yisrael. And now says the Sefer HaChinuch, three lines. We'll see how it comes together. V'yadua, it is known, she'anachto amakodesh, we are a holy nation, ein anu tachas kochav u'mazal, they say, ein mazal Yisrael. People still wish each other mazal tov. I wouldn't bring this up if someone wishes you mazal tov, but that's a sugi in itself. What does it mean, ein mazal Yisrael? But in principle, ein anu tachas kochav u'mazal, Hashem u'nachalateinu, direct. Our connection there is with Hashem is direct. Like we find with the Ovos, ki inyan shematzinu ba'ovos, shesam hakel ma'alosam lemala misari ma'ala. In other words, and here the Sefer Chinuch, if we watch carefully, is taking this idea even one step further. Not only is he saying that Hashem deals with us not through any sar, he has placed a level, beginning with the Ovos, of Yisrael higher than that of the Sarim, in which case there's no need to receive anything from the Sarim, because the Ovos themselves, and by extension to a degree, Am Yisrael itself, is higher than the Sarim. Where do we see that, and where did that happen? Ke'inyan shekosu be'Yaakov. Look what happened with Yaakov, where he has that confrontation by Ovik Ishimo, and what does it say? He's called Yisrael. Ki Yisrael Yeshemecha. Why? Ki Sariso im Elohim. Im Elohim, really. Kisarisa im Elohim, which we, I think, normally translate, you wrestled, you struggled with. Sarisa doesn't mean struggled, it doesn't mean wrestled. It means to lord over. It means to be higher than. You are the Sar over Elohim, meaning all of those other forces. Kulomar, she'aso hakel Sar al Hasarim. Hashem allowed Yaakov to attain, through the efforts and endeavors of the others, Yaakov attained a level higher than the Sarim. So why do you need to receive from Sarim now? And Sefer Chinuch goes on to say that Avram and Yitzhak are also called Yisrael, and that's what it means. This level began with Avram, developed through Yitzhak and through Yaakov. But what is the point for in terms of our discussion? When does the Malach say this to Yaakov? You're called Yisrael, Kisarisa and Elohim, which means your level is higher than the Sarim, which means that your connection with Hashem is direct. Where does he say that? He says that in response to Yaakov's words, Ki im beirachtani, I'm not going to let you go, Ki im beirachtani. And what does Ki im beirachtani mean? Rashi says, beirachtani in the past, hodeh li'al habrachos. Admit to me that the brachos truly belong to me. Beirachtani means admit to me that the brachos belong to me. Okay, how does he do that? He calls him Yisrael. What's calling him Yisrael? What to do with admitting the brachos really belong to Yaakov? As with David Cohen, because that's what the brachas are saying, the yitin l'cholakim, Hashem will give you, meaning direct, with all that's involved, not through any type of intermediary or any such thing, because you're higher than the Sarim, as represented by the name Yisrael. That's how, by saying your name will be Yisrael, was the Malach's way of recognizing that the brachas really did come and belong to Yaakov. Truly a special insight there from Rabbi David Cohen. We'll leave it over there for this evening.